All right. I'm going to try not to be too loud because we have a group over here working as well. I'm Laura Boxman, and I'm with the Alabama North Carolina Prevention Training Center, and I'm working with Carrie Hogan, who's with the Baltimore Prevention Training Center as well. And so I'm going to just take you through a few slides because we're going to showcase the didactic component, but also we're going to get into more of an interactive style of training in just a minute. So let me make sure I know which way I'm going here. Okay. I do want to thank Linda Cregan from the California PTC for many of these slides, and as well as my colleagues in the Clinical Behavioral and Partner Management PTCs for their input into this training. So quickly, you know, what we're going to try to accomplish in this brief time is talk about the rationale for partner management. I'm going to discuss some of the key motivators to facilitate a discussion about sex partners, describe the coaching process for client referral of sex partners, and Carrie and I are going to take you through a scenario to kind of see how that works in the clinic, and then describe at least two strategies to assist patients to refer partners for examination and treatment for gonorrhea and chlamydia. And so we're going to focus in terms of the time frame of partner management on gonococcal and chlamydial infections specifically. So I'm going to just start off with a case. This is an 18-year-old female. She presents with 5 days of a yellowish vaginal discharge, and it does not have a particular odor to it, not associated with itching, no abdominal pain. She does not have any irregular vaginal bleeding. She says she does not use any barrier contraceptive methods, and she is monogamous. She has a significant past medical history in that she had chlamydial infection a year ago. And when we examine her, we see these findings. And you can see here the cervix closest to me that has the mucopus coming from the cervix. You do your bimanual exam. She has some right adnexal tenderness and some cervical motion tenderness. And the wet prep yields quite a few inflammatory cells or white blood cells on that prep. Her chlamydia test comes back positive, and her gonorrhea test is negative. And so I just brought up this brief case to illustrate the issue that many of us deal with in STD clinics and in other clinic settings, where we see recurrent infection quite a bit, and it has significant impact on the health of our patients. As you guys are aware, chlamydia and gonorrhea, they're two of the most common reportable infections in the United States. Chlamydia has an estimated 3 million cases annually, and gonorrhea an estimated 1 million cases annually. We know that chlamydia and gonorrhea can cause a variety of different clinical symptoms as well as complications. And just to demonstrate, you see the male with his urethritis, which would be something we call non-gonococcal urethritis if chlamydia is in play, or gonococcal urethritis where we see the gonorrhea on the Gram stain or have it on a test positive in the case of gonorrhea. You see another cervix with pus coming from it. And then both of them, it may be hard to tell if that's an eye there that someone's prying open, but gonorrhea and chlamydia can both cause conjunctivitis, and then you see a baby with pneumonia from chlamydial infection acquired at the time of birth. Some of the complications we see from these infections include pelvic inflammatory disease, tubo ovarian abscesses, ectopic pregnancy, and chronic pelvic pain in women. In men, we see men develop epididymitis or orchitis in the setting of when these infections go untreated. And then for newborns, conjunctivitis, or in the case of chlamydial infection, pneumonia. We know that these infections, if untreated, can cause the permanent reproductive harm in women, and this is just an example of what happens in the setting of untreated chlamydial infection. 20 to 40% of these women will develop PID, and of those, about 6% have experienced an ectopic pregnancy, which is a life-threatening condition if not picked up soon enough. 18% develop chronic pelvic pain, which the expense of that complication, I don't know that we really have a good number to put on the psychological and financial repercussions of a woman presenting over and over and over again to a doctor and getting repeated courses of antibiotics and sometimes surgical therapy. And then 20% experience infertility. So why do we want to discuss partners in light of this? Well, obviously these are sexually transmitted infections, so there's more than one person that we're dealing with. Even though we've got one person in front of us, we have to think outside of that. We know that the chance of chlamydial reinfection is high. The younger the female client, the higher the chance of reinfection, and that has been found in repeated studies. We know that serious sequelae are more likely with repeated infection. And there's a study here that we're quoting from Dr. Hillis, where women with repeat chlamydial infection have 2 times the odds of ectopic pregnancy, 4 times the odds of pelvic inflammatory disease. And if you take this out further, you see these odds increase in almost a dose response pattern. So we don't want to go there. We don't want our patients to be reinfected. This graph shows it's a conglomeration of several studies, and these triangles demonstrate the proportion of patients that are reinfected, and you can see there at the bottom of over months after infection. And notice that over time, basically the longer you follow, it spread the interval out, the higher the reinfection rates. So if you look at 1 month, about 8% are reinfected. If you take out between 9 months, almost a quarter or more are reinfected. This is across 3 different studies. But the point of the slide is this is unfortunately a very common phenomenon. More specifically, if we look at the study from Dr. Hillis again, where she screened about 40,000 women or did a study of about 40,000 women who had their first chlamydial infection, over half of those, I think that's supposed to be less than 15, were reinfected within 9 months, and 30% of those between the ages of 15 and 19 were reinfected in 9 months. So those are obviously huge numbers. Another study demonstrated that 15% of those less than 19 were reinfected in 3 months, so a shorter time interval, and so still significant numbers. And then this large study that involved several STD clinics throughout the country, and the study looked at people who came in as partners to a variety of different STDs, found that partner management actually is efficient in detecting new cases of a disease, because when they looked at the 470 female partners of men with gonorrhea, about half of their partners had gonorrhea. So obviously it's not 100%, but 50% is pretty good odds, actually. And about 20% were positive for chlamydia, who were contacts to men with gonorrhea. If you look at the male partners, same kind of thing. About 50% were positive for chlamydia. Fewer were positive for gonorrhea. But as we know, we do like to take that opportunity when we have partners of infected individuals coming into clinic to screen for other STDs, since STDs tend to travel together. So what are some things we can use to motivate our clients, our patients, to refer their partners in? Obviously, this is a bit of a sticky situation. It's not entirely comfortable for people, but we want to emphasize some points to try to, promote their health and see that this is an advantage to them. And one thing we want to talk about are complications of untreated disease. And we've gone through those already, the PID, the ectopic pregnancy, the epididymitis, orchitis in men. We want to talk about the HIV connection and the fact that at this point, every STD, whether it be BV, TRIC, gonorrhea, chlamydia, genital ulcer disease, obviously, the association with risk varies according to the STD, but all of them have been found to increase enhance the transmission and acquisition of HIV. So we want to bring that up as well. We want to emphasize this asymptomatic infection piece and also let our patients know that, when they talk to their partners may not have symptoms. And that is not a, you know, really an excuse for them not to come in. They need to be aware that if that many of these infections are asymptomatic and that that does not guarantee that their partner is not infected. We want to talk about reinfection and the importance of reinfection to the reproductive health. And then, of course, transmission and all the ways in which STDs can be transmitted and how we can prevent transmission of STDs. One of the key points is to work with patients to customize a plan to inform and get those partners in for treatment. And we want to emphasize all recent partners. And depending on the STD we're dealing with, that's going to determine the time frame that we're talking about. So for HIV, it's going to be different than syphilis, than trich, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. So just some key points when we're talking about gonococcal, chlamydial, or even trichomonal infection. We want to get all partners within the last 60 days. So we directly ask patients, how many people have you had sex with in the last 2 months? If they have not had sex in the 2 months, which happens sometimes, then it's that last partner that we need to get to come in. We want to talk about the options for partner notification and treatment with each of our patients and assist our clients with identifying the option that works best for them. So kind of the minimal components of counseling, when we treat an STD, we want them to abstain from sex for 7 days after treatment for themselves and their partners, and that 7-day benchmark gets set at the time their partner gets treated. We want to emphasize the importance of contacting all their partners. We want to give them specific information about where those partners can go, whether that be in the form of, you know, verbal communication, but even better, a card or a pamphlet or something along those lines, so that their partner knows where to go when they find this out about this. We want to discuss and prepare for, you know, potential reactions that partners may have to this news and talk about how to communicate with them. And the other important piece for gonococcal and chlamydial infection is it's also very important that our clients come back in 3 to 4 months and get retested because these reinfection rates are so high. So this is not a test of cure, it is a test of reinfection. So some concepts of STD counseling. We want to be neutral. And one of the important points, it may seem obvious, but I have actually seen it happen. We want to make sure that when we're doing the counseling that we're in a position where we're eye to eye with the patient. So the patient shouldn't be lying down on the table and, you know, because that's just that's a power imbalance there. It can be very intimidating for the patient. Sometimes we get very hurried in our clinical environment and try to pack a lot in, but it is important that when we're doing the counseling piece that you're seeing eye to eye to them. But you want to also be neutral, non-judgmental. That's not our place. You know, our place is to help people to stay healthy and get healthy. We want to put feelings first. We want to offer options, but not directives. We have to accept the fact that we can't control all of this. A lot of us are control freaks, but we do have a limited role. We can inform and educate and show them what the options are, but we can only take it so far. And they understand that the client is in charge of his or her behavior. And nothing we can educate about it, but we can't force them literally to change by the power of our will. We want to use open-ended questions, and these are just some examples, and we'll go through some of these. And these are things that when we do the training that we work with people about using these different styles of asking questions. And that also, though, includes silence. It is okay to be quiet and listen and not fill the air with verbal diarrhea. I'll try not to do that myself. So let me just give an example of a transitional phrase for clinicians. You're going to go through your counseling piece with the partner, and Dr. Geisler's over there, and I can hear him. But you want to go through your counseling with individuals about the disease process, their treatment. But then an example would be, okay, now that we've talked about how serious this disease can be be if left untreated, let's talk about how to privately get your partners within the last couple of months tested and treated, and we can do this in the following way. So that's just a way to transition into that whole issue of the partner notification. Some of the options that are there that you can discuss, there's provider referral, and that's when a trained health department personnel does the notification of the partner. There's patient referral, which I think would be probably the most commonly utilized for gonococcal and chlamydial infection, where the patient notifies their partner, and you know they can do this with coaching from either the partner services provider or the clinician. There's contract referral, and where the patient can make an initial attempt, but if they chicken out, then the provider can then go in and do the referral themselves. There's third-party referral. That involves providers other than health department staff. And so there are those options out there. I don't think that's as common. And then there's dual referral, where a patient agrees to disclose the HIV status or their STD status with that provider there. So with that, that's our little didactic part. We are going to now go through some experiential-type interaction. And Sister Mary Terry Hogan is going to work with me, and we're going to show you a provider-client interaction. You can't hear me? Y'all can't hear me? Oh, okay. Sorry about that. All right, we're going to ignore the microphone. All right, so you said you've been burning intermittently for a couple of days. So are you having any, are you peeing more frequently?
Well, kind of yes and no.
Uh-huh.
You know, something's just not right. You know,
okay.
I'm just feeling a little weird.
Any discharge from your vagina? That's abnormal?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really notice that much. You know, like in the middle of the month, sometimes there's a little bit in my panties. I don't notice that much.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you a few personal questions, okay? Just to help me better take care of you. When was the last time that you had any kind of sexual contact?
I'm trying to let you know that things are looking up. I'm
uh-huh.
a really nice guy.
Okay.
We've been going out for about 4 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And we really, really settled in about a month ago. So I've been getting a little regular fun.
Okay. So you've been having sex?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And how many partners have you had then in the last month?
Oh, come on, Dr. B.
I'm telling you, just my, you know, my new guys.
That's it?
I don't have patience with a lot of, you know, having a lot of partners.
Okay. Yeah. All right, and when you have sex, is it vaginal sex? Penis in the vagina kind of sex?
Well, yeah.
Are you going down on him?
Well, every once in a while, yeah.
Okay, and is he putting his penis in your bottom?
No, I don't like that.
Okay, all right. I know it seems like some strange questions, but I just need to know where I need to check you, okay? Because we would want to make sure, you know, we want to check you out and see what's going on, and it wouldn't be good if I didn't check you in all the places you could be exposed.
Exposed to what?
Well, you know, sometimes there are some infections out there, sexually transmitted infections, and a lot of times they don't cause symptoms.
This is really a nice guy.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he is, but, you know, sometimes people have things and they don't even know it because a lot of these infections don't have symptoms. Mm-hmm. So it's just, that's why it's so important that you come in and you get checked. Okay?
Okay. All right.
So why don't we take a look at you and just see what's going on and we go from there.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Three days later, phone rings.
All right, so we're going to now come back in the clinic and sit down. And how are you doing, Terry?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm still feeling a little weird, but, you know, uncomfortable, but okay.
Okay, well, you know, as you know, we didn't find anything specific on your exam, but the test that I sent for chlamydia actually came back positive. Okay, have you ever heard of chlamydia before?
Isn't that like gonorrhea?
It is a sexually transmitted infection. It is curable. Okay, it's caused by a bacteria. And
I don't understand how I could get chlamydia.
So, you know, as we had talked about a little bit before, chlamydia is a very common infection that people have, and many times it does not cause symptoms. So because it doesn't cause symptoms, unless someone has gone in and been specifically checked for it, they may not know that they have it. But then sometimes when it passes to someone else, they can develop symptoms.
Could I have had this for a long time?
It's really hard to know. It's hard to know exactly when, you know, whether you've had it or whether he had it.
I was married to was playing around a lot. Could I have had this for a long time?
Well, you know, I checked you for this, remember, at the end of your divorce.
Okay.
So, you know, tests are not 100%. They're not perfect, but you did not have this about a year ago when we checked. The important thing is that we can treat this and take care of it, and it's curable. Okay, so it's a good thing that we found out about it. So I'm going to give you some antibiotics today, and it's going to be important that you not have any sexual activity for at least a week after you finish taking them.
I don't think you need to worry about that.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to be having any sexual activity for quite some time, at least not with that SOB I just thought I found who had a nice way about him.
Well, we don't know that he knew about this either, okay? So it is, you know, remember, it is asymptomatic oftentimes. And if he didn't have a specific symptom and didn't go into a doc, or if he went into a doc and the doc didn't screen him, he may not have known what was going on, okay? So we can't take this as evidence that he stepped out and, you know, or you know, as I mentioned, who gave whom what, for sure. So I think it's going to be important that we just get you treated and also get him treated, okay? So just a couple key points for you. We're going to give you some antibiotics today. No sex for at least a week. I don't think you want to swear off sex forever. I know you're upset right now. You know, no sex for a week, and then I want you to come back in and see me in 3 to 4 months and get rechecked. But we do need to not only think about your health, but also in keeping you healthy, we need to talk about him. And you mentioned in the last 2 months, remind me again, How many partners have you had in the last 2 months?
Just that one guy.
Just that one guy?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so there's a couple ways that we can do this. So there's, you know, either I can do it, you can do it, or we can do it together. All right? Now, specifically, I can either, you can give me his information, and I can contact him without giving your name and have him come in for treatment or help him find treatment. If you can contact him yourself, and you can do that in person or over the phone or with a letter, it's just whatever works best for you. Or if we want to say that you're going to do it, and if you don't feel comfortable, then I can finish it up. Or we could do it together, okay? And there's even health department and other people that can help as well if you're not comfortable with this.
Yeah, well, if I send him to the health department, they're going to blast his name all over the place, and I don't want that to happen.
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, the health department can do this in a very professional, confidential manner. They actually are they're experts at this, okay? And so they can get some information from you. They will not even tell him who you are or who the contact is, and they don't share his name. So his confidentiality would be assured, really, regardless of which way you want to go with this. So what are you thinking right now in terms of what you'd like to do?
Well, what I'd like to do is hit him over the head with something hard, but
okay.
I think that, yeah, I know that he's the only person I've had sex with.
Okay.
And if I've got an infection, it had to come from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so angry with him right now, I don't even want to look at him.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if he didn't know he had it, you know, it's like I'm not a virgin, so I can't expect him to be one either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I mean, I really thought he was a nice guy. I really thought I found somebody that I could really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how to go about talking to him about it.
Okay, well, remember, this doesn't mean he's not a nice guy. I know this is hard, you know, to hear this diagnosis, but it does not mean he's not a nice guy. You know, are you comfortable? Do you feel like it would be safe for you to tell him? Do you have any concerns about your safety?
I didn't even think of that. I mean, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
If I brought him in here, would you see him? Would you examine him?
And sure.
Maybe we ought to try that. Maybe I ought to talk to him and tell him I have a problem and tell him that he needs to come in and see you.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Do you want to, when are you going to tell him?
Well, I guess I'll tell him as soon as I leave here, when I get home.
Okay.
I'll give him a call.
So you're going to do it over the telephone?
I don't want to see him right now, so mm-hmm. I think calling him would be a best idea.
And what are you thinking of saying? I mean, let's kind of run through this a little bit. What are you planning to say to him?
I have no idea. I've never had a sexually transmitted infection before. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Well, there's just a few points to remember, okay? We want to think about, you know, we've talked about how common they are. It's important that you talk to him about the fact that it's asymptomatic, because a lot of times when people hear about STDs, they think they have to have a symptom. And a lot of people, and men in particular, sometimes can feel like if they don't have a discharge or a drip, they don't have it and they don't need to go further with it. So it is important to emphasize that, you know, he may not have symptoms. That does not mean that he doesn't have the infection. I would bring up, you know, different complications of not getting treated, and that includes, you know, pelvic pain, if it became involved in the upper female organs, like pelvic inflammatory disease could lead to pelvic pain, to ectopic pregnancies or tubal pregnancies. I don't know if you've heard of those. There's just other complications that we don't want to go there. We need to get the treatment so that doesn't happen.
These infections can increase the risk of HIV in people who get exposed to HIV. If they have this infection going on, it can put them at higher risk.
Do
that's
I
another
have
reason.
HIV?
Well, you know, we checked you for that the other day, and your results were negative. And we can talk more about that in just a minute. But I would also emphasize to them that it's important for him to get treated so that, you know, you don't pass it back and forth, because that can increase the complications. And that it is curable. And so, you know, while it's upsetting to hear about this, it also is a good thing as you know about it and you can do something about it.
Okay. Looking at the time.
Okay. Am I boring you?
I'm trying not to be two people at one time. I'm also aware that we're supposed to break and all
that. So what do you think? I mean, what else can I help you with regarding this?
I just don't know. How am I going to open a conversation with him? I mean, I'm angry with him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I saw him right now, I would just say, you gave me an infection. And you know, I would call him a name, and I mean, I've known you for a long time, Dr. B. I don't want to, you know, make your ears turn red, but there are a few names I'd like to call him.
Well, it would be hard for you to make my ears turn red. But I understand.
Well, what I'd like to say is, you bastard, you gave me an infection. What have you been doing?
Yeah. Okay.
That's how I'd like to tell him.
Right. Right. Well, maybe it's better to step back a little bit, think about the information we've talked about, and you know, cool down a little bit before you call him. But, you know, I would open it that, you know, I have some important information I found out. I have an STD. And I would advise you to not try to get into the finger pointing.
Okay.
Okay? But just to share, you've got this STD. It's important that for your health and his health that...
Yeah, but you know, I've told you that he's the only one. I mean, I didn't give him anything. He gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know me. You know I wouldn't be hanging around with people who would give me infections if I knew.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we don't know, though, you know? So. Are we good? So our game plan is you're going to cool down. Kind of take this all into consideration. You're going to give him a call and then refer him to me, and then we're going to meet with him together, and we'll go through, you know, the treatment and things like that.
Do you want me to call you tomorrow and let you know and see when we can bring, when you can come in?
That sounds like a good idea.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll try that, but I'm not happy right now.
I understand.
I'm really not happy.
I understand. Okay.
I've got to be 30 years old again. And I found the right guy. It's the wrong problem.
Well, I was telling Terry, she said that would not be realistic for her to have chlamydia, but one of the best cases, I shouldn't say best, but classic cases of chlamydial cervicitis I ever saw was in a 64-year-old woman who had hooked up with her high school guy, you know, former high school boyfriend who evidently had been with some high school girls. And it was not consistent with the epidemiology, but I was so excited about it. I was enrolling for a study and enrolled her in the study, and then after she left, I was like, she doesn't meet study eligibility because she's too old, you know, but it was classic, and her test was positive. So you don't know about these things.
It's highly unlucky, but if that luck was going the way it was going, I would end up with this.
All right, so that's just an example of some interaction, you know, what we do in these trainings is work with participants around, you know, kind of doing the communication around these issues and the back and forth. And you would get to role play and stuff to practice these skills.
Yeah. Sometimes when we do our trainings and we recognize, you know, I have a clinician who will come in and say, you just spent 15 minutes talking to a patient. I don't have that time. But what you do when you come to our classes and you get the chance to role play is that you pick up some of the techniques. You might not use all of them. You know, you might use one or two. And Laura is very, very easy to talk with. So it wouldn't be a problem, you know, to talk. At the same time, I could be 15 years old and worried that she's going to talk to my mom. Mm-hmm. So that would be a whole different set of circumstances. And so it just gives you some problem solving. And it, as a clinician, you already see patients on a regular basis. So you have the antenna out sometimes. You hear what's not spoken. And so that, you know, it gives you an opportunity to find problems if there are some.
Yes.
It's not a threat so much. Laura should talk about how you do it, you know, in a private sector as a clinician. As from Jody and I both had field experience in the past, and what we would do, we would call that a contractual interaction. And I would say, I'd get all of the information up front, and then the person would say, I really want to contact this person myself. And I'll say, that's great, I'm going to give you, you know, 24 hours. If I haven't gotten information that that person has made an appointment or gone to see somebody, I'm going to go out and get in touch with them. And if I go out and get in touch with them, I want you to know, I will not mention your name, I'll not mention where you were, where you came from. The problem we have today with gonorrhea and chlamydia in most places is that there's not enough field staff to do that. So the physician, if the physician is able, may do it. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So we're looking at other options.
But yeah, I think that's appropriate. And you tell them on the front end, there's a timeline associated with it, and it's just really so important. You have to know it's taken place. And so I've done that with HIV disclosure in patients before too, that you get a certain amount of time, and then after that someone else is going to help them out, but in a confident, and emphasizing the confidentiality piece.
But you always tell people what you're going to do, because
right.
If you don't say that up front and then somebody contacts them, then you've lost all the credibility that you built up.
Right. Any other questions or comments? Right.
What happens a lot of time is the person, the partner goes elsewhere for treatment, not always to back to us. And in the meantime, my patient gets reinfected again because they can't go beyond that 7 days of not having sex, with waiting for their partner to get treated at that point. I just recently treated a man who basically finally has epididymitis because it's been the fifth time that I've had to retreat him. Also, it takes place that sometimes the primary doctors or the primary clinicians in the real world don't know the CDC guidelines. They don't treat appropriately. Their patients' tests are negative. My patients' test positive. They believe their test. They don't treat the person. So it's a really crazy system sometimes. and then we have less people doing any kind of partner notification. Our goals, where we are, is primarily syphilis, gonorrhea, and HIV right now is our goals. We can't have time to do chlamydia follow-ups as far as that goes. So there's a lot of, you know, craziness per se as far as that. But it's very difficult. So I feel that when we do all these training programs, we don't get in a lot of the local clinicians who should be there. And you try to get them in, and it's a free program, and they just don't come because they don't have the time to do this.
And that's a really good point. I mean, if you look at, you know, where are most STDs diagnosed from, they're mostly out of non-STD clinic settings. And so, and that is a training center is what we strive to do because, you know, the public health sector, many of people are doing the, you know, following the guidelines, and it's getting into the private sector that's so challenging. So if anybody has any ideas about how to do that, I mean, these guys that, you know, just coming from a background where my husband's that was in private practice, they don't even eat lunch. So getting them to stop and do a training is so difficult, but they are the one. That's why, you know, I always encourage my patients to try to get the partner to come into the health department, just so that I know kind of, and, you know, of course, give them a card or something that at least spells it out to these providers what the appropriate treatment is, you know, to try to get them to, so that I'm not having more of a guarantee about how they're being treated.
The only suggestion that I would have to that is just building a relationship with the PMDs. That is the only way that I've been successful in getting them to change old habits. We still have some physicians that are using, I think it's the Red Book or something like that.
Oh, the
and
Red
when
Book?
I suggest to them the CDC guidelines, Anthony, what are you talking about?
Uh-huh.
And so we have a conversation about it. And sometimes it doesn't happen all the time. I do have to incorporate Terry or Ann to help out. Only when I have to bring in the big wigs do I do that. But it's relationship. You've got to develop a relationship, and it's one by one. It is a little bit more time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to deal with that physician, especially like if you're dealing with congenital syphilis, if you know you're going to be dealing with that physician a lot, then it might be a good idea for you to, you know, take a little visit to the doctor's office. Like I said, it is time consuming, but I don't have to do that again with that physician, and I can use that physician to talk to some of her colleagues about what we've discussed. So
mm-hmm.
that's the only suggestion
okay.
that's meaningful that I think that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No, I just did you say that you had a card that you could give the patients to
mm-hmm.
give to the physician?
Yeah.
Cool.
We have what is it, the pink, the green, and the blue.
Okay.
Depending on what the condition is. And it spells out the treatment they need to give that
okay.
partner when they bring it in.
Seriously?
That they need to, and I think if my memory serves, it also says you need to do this no matter what, you know, the testing is. So
okay.
just go ahead and treat them. And with this regimen.
Very good. That's a good idea.
Well, guys, thank you very much for allowing me to be 30 years old again. And I'm really upset that none of you warned me about this nice guy that I met after a terrible divorce. But at any rate, I think we're now time for the break. And if you have another one of our sessions, Pat Corey Doniger is talking about doing
risk assessment and behavioral counseling.
I always call it triage. It's not triage. Sexual history taking. I've only been in the field a little while. But anyway, she's in the Magnolia Room, and if you want to see an example of doing a syphilis screen test and also discussing a syphilis case review, that's Linda Cregan, and she's in Juniper. So thank you very much.
Okay. All right. We're going to go ahead and get started with the second round of managing partners and preventing reinfections. I'm Laura Bachman from the Alabama North Carolina Prevention Training Center, and I'm working with Terry Hogan, who's from the Baltimore Training Center affiliated with Johns Hopkins University. And I want to thank again Linda Cregan from the California Training Center for
letting me use a lot of her slides, and also for the clinical behavioral partner management, PPCs, for their input regarding this training. So some of the things that we're going to go over during this workshop is we're going to talk about the rationale for partner management. We're going to discuss key motivators to facilitate a discussion about sex partners. We're going to describe and actually demonstrate the coaching process for client referral of sex partners, and then describe at least two strategies that you can use to assist patients to refer partners for examination and treatment of gonorrhea and chlamydia. And so we're going to focus in this particular, in terms of our time frame we're working with for partner referral, on gonorrhea and chlamydia. All right. So I'm going to start with a case. This is an 18-year-old female who presents with 5 days of a yellowish vaginal discharge. There's no malodor to it. It's not associated with itching. She denies abdominal or pelvic pain or irregular vaginal bleeding. She says that she doesn't use barrier contraceptive methods and she's monogamous. Her past medical history is significant for chlamydia 1 year ago. When you get to the exam, this is what you see, and in particular the cervix here closest to me where you have some pus or mucopus coming from the os or opening. And you notice on the bimanual exam she has right-eyed nasal and cervical motion tenderness on exam. When you do the wet prep, you find a moderate number of white blood cells or inflammatory cells, but otherwise it's unremarkable. The test returns and you find that her chlamydia test is positive, gonorrhea test is negative. But this is a scenario, I start off with this, because unfortunately it's pretty common where we see people coming back again and again with infection. And that's why we're talking about partner services today, or partner management. As you guys are well aware, chlamydia and gonorrhea are the most common reportable STDs in the United States. Actually, they're two of the most common diseases reported in the United States, with about 3 million cases of chlamydia annually and about 1 million cases of gonorrhea reported annually. We know that chlamydia and gonorrhea can cause symptoms and also complications. And there's some pictures here of some of the symptoms we see in men, urethritis. We also can see urethritis in women. Often it is under-recognized. But you can see the lovely drip coming from his penis. You can see the pus here indicating cervicitis when a woman is infected. It may be hard to recognize that this is an eye that they're prying open, and that is conjunctivitis that we can see with gonococcal and chlamydial infection. And then here is a chest x-ray of a child with chlamydial pneumonia. Untreated infections can lead to complications, including pelvic inflammatory disease in women, tubo-ovarian abscesses, ectopic pregnancy, and chronic pelvic pain. Which is a very difficult clinical entity from a psychological and medical standpoint to manage. Men can develop epididymitis or orchitis, and as I mentioned, in newborns you can see conjunctivitis or pneumonia. Just to demonstrate this more graphically, if you have a woman in this instance with untreated genital chlamydial infection, about 20-40% of these women will develop pelvic inflammatory disease. 6% of them will go on to have an ectopic pregnancy or tubal pregnancy. 18% chronic pelvic pain. And 1 in 5 will become infertile. We also, so these points, why do we need to talk about partners in this? Well, obviously we're dealing with sexually transmitted infections. So while you have your client in front of you, there's obviously more people involved than your client. And we know from multiple studies now that the chance of reinfection is very high for chlamydial infection. The younger the female client, the higher the chance of reinfection. We also know that the more times a woman gets infected with chlamydia, the higher the rates of these chronic sequelae, including ectopic pregnancy, 2 times the odds of ectopic pregnancy in women experiencing a reinfection, 4 times the odds of pelvic inflammatory disease. And if you take the time frame out and follow women longer and see women who've had even more than one reinfection, the odds of developing these chronic sequelae increase, almost a dose-response kind of pattern. This is just a conglomeration of studies looking at chlamydial reinfection that demonstrate, basically, as you can see, it's kind of a trend up, and you can see on one axis the proportion of people who are reinfected, and then the other axis the months after infection. And over time, the longer you follow people out, the more reinfections you find. So when the follow-up in this one study was a month, you have about 8% were reinfected. If you take it out to check in people 9 months after their initial infection, over a quarter are reinfected. So a very common problem. There's a study, a large study by Hillis, that looked at about 40,000 women with their first chlamydial infection, and over half of those, I think this is less than 15, were reinfected within 9 months, and one-third between the ages of 15 and 19 were reinfected in that time frame. Another study by Schillinger looked at 1,400 females and found that 15% within 3 months, and this is a shorter time frame, of those less than 19 years of age were reinfected, and 12% of those over the age of 20 were reinfected in that time frame. So a very common problem we're going to deal with frequently. We know that partner management is efficient in detecting new cases of disease. This is a study by Steckler, who looked at partners in STD clinics across the country who came in. So these were repeat contacts to STD that came into the health department for treatment. And of the 470 female partners of men with gonorrhea, almost half of the women had gonorrhea, and about 20% had chlamydia. Okay? That's a pretty good case-finding ratio there. There was less syphilis and HIV in this heterosexual population. Of the 1,600 male partners, the females with chlamydia, same situation, about half of the men had chlamydia. Fewer, but still a significant number were infected with gonorrhea. This also emphasizes why we want to emphasize to our patients that they get their partners in for treatment so that they can also be evaluated for other STDs, because as you can see here, there are other STDs in play. So when we talk to clients about bringing their partners in, obviously this is not an easy thing to do. It's very challenging. But we want to emphasize some points to kind of, make them feel better or more desirous of wanting to do this for their own health. We want to talk about the complications of untreated disease that we just went over. We want to talk about the HIV connection and that gonococcal and chlamydial infection, and actually more evidence for TRIC. And then, of course, other STDs like syphilis. We know that these STDs can increase the risk of acquiring and transmitting HIV if our client is exposed. We want to talk about the asymptomatic nature of these infections. Many of our clients and their partners do not appreciate the fact that most people are asymptomatic. And then they think that if they go and tell their partner and their partner doesn't have symptoms, and they say, oh, I don't have a problem, it ends there. And we want to educate them that, that's not good enough, it can't stop there, because they may actually harbor an infection they don't know about. We want to emphasize this point about reinfection and the fact that we do see these sequelae increasing proportionately as women, in particular, the studies have shown, are challenged again and again with these agents. We don't want to keep challenging our clients again and again with these agents. We don't want them to get reinfected. And then to talk about transmission and all the ways in which these STDs can be transmitted. So just a few key points. We want to work with our patients to customize, and that's a key word, a plan for informing and treating all recent partners. How do we do this? Well, specifically the time frame we're working with for gonococcal and chlamydial infection and also for TRIC would be all partners in the prior 60 days. So we want to ask our patients, how many people have you had sex with in the last 2 months. If it's been more than 2 months, then it needs to be that last partner that they had sex with that we need to focus on. We want to talk about the options for partner notification and treatment with each patient, and then assist clients in choosing the method that works best for them and for their partner. The minimum component of the counseling messages we need to give when we have an infected client in front of us, we want to talk about abstaining from sex for 7 days after treatment for themselves and their partners, and set that time at when that partner gets treated. We want to talk about contacting all partners within the time period. We want to give specific information about where their partners can seek care and the consequences to the partner's partners if not treated. We also want to talk about possible partner reactions and kind of go ahead and troubleshoot or think about how our patients are going to handle those reactions and different scenarios for that. And then we want to reemphasize to them the guidelines, which are that if you have a documented gonococcal or chlamydial infection, that they return for re-screening in 3 to 4 months. And remember, this is not a test of cure. This is a test for reinfection because these reinfection rates are so high. So some concepts, a neutral stance. So we want to be non-judgmental. Also, we want to make sure that we make an eye contact. It's important that you're kind of, you're not doing this while a client's laying on the table, because that's really an unequal kind of power imbalance there in terms of the positioning of their bodies. So, you know, in a chair, face to face, or at least where you can and make that eye contact, you want to put feelings first. You want to offer options, not directives. We have to accept our limited role. So, I mean, I know all of us, if we could will it, we would have everybody, you know, change their behavior to be safer behavior and bring everybody in that's been exposed. But we have a limited role. We need to educate, inform, hope, motivate. But unfortunately, we can't carry it all out ourselves. And remember that the client is in charge of his or her behavior. So when we ask questions, many of you are familiar with this. There's open-ended. You want to kind of go with the open-ended style, letting the client expand. Obviously, we're working in very time-compressed settings, but you really get more information if you can let, you know, kind of start an open-end. And then polite imperatives to get more information. Remember, it is okay to be silent and to let them feel that silence. So I'm going to give you an example of a transitional phrase. So if, say, we have a client, we're treating them for an infection, we've kind of gone through some of these basics about the infection and the medication and the consequences, and so then a transition that works for some people, and you'll develop your own transition and what you're comfortable with. But an example would be, you know, now that we've talked about how serious the disease can be if left untreated, let's talk about how to privately get your partners within the last couple of months tested and treated. And we can do this in 5 different ways. And this is just an example of different options for patients that can be explored. One of them would be provider referral. And that's where a trained health department personnel takes the information and in a confidential manner contacts the patient's partners. There's patient referral, which is probably the most common one we use in the health department setting for gonococcal and chlamydial infections, just because of manpower issues, among other things. But and that's when the patient does the contacting, either on the phone, they could do it in person to person, they could leave a letter potentially. But that would be an option. Usually it would be good to try to coach them about the way to do that. There's contract referral, where the patient makes the initial attempt, and if they chicken out or they're unsuccessful, then the provider finishes it up. There's third-party referral. That's when a provider other than the health department does the contacting, and those options are out there. And then there's dual referral, and that's where the patient brings the partner in and you do it together. So those are just some of the options. Now, Sister Mary Terry Hogan is going to work with me just to, you know, kind of take you through an example of a patient-provider interaction, because if you attended one of these trainings, this is how we would go about doing the training, and it would be more of an interactive kind of, instead of someone up here with slides like I've just been doing. So we're going to take you through an interaction as an example of some of the points to cover. And this is a 30-year-old divorcee with a new lease on life. Yeah, she's rather enjoying this. Yeah.
Hey, Dr. B, good to see you.
Good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really doing great, except for this urinary tract infection. That's why I wanted to see you.
Okay.
But other than that, I'm doing fantastic.
All right, well, take a seat. Why don't you tell me about it? What's going on?
Well, you know, I went through that awful divorce about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I met this new guy, and we've been going out for a couple of months, and he's terrific. I really, really like him. I'm really happy.
Good.
You know, just get rid of this urinary tract infection, and I'm set to go.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that things are going so well. Why don't you tell me what kind of symptoms you're experiencing? You said it's a urinary tract infection, but what exactly are you feeling?
Well, it's like sometimes burning, and sometimes I just feel a fullness sometimes. It's like weird. I know something's
mm-hmm.
not right. I can't really put my finger on it. It sort of reminds me of that urinary tract infection I had a couple years ago when I came in to see you. So
okay.
I just want to get it taken care of.
Okay. And are you you're burning when you urinate sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah.
Are you peeing more frequently than normal?
Sometimes it seems like it, and then sometimes it seems like I need to pee and I can't.
Right.
You know, so it's like I can't put my finger on any one particular
mm-hmm.
issue. It's like it's just really weird.
Okay. Well, are any other symptoms? Are you having blood when you wipe?
No, nothing like that.
Any abnormal vaginal discharge that you've noticed?
Nah, just the normal stuff. I mean, I have some, you know, discharge in my panties sometime during the month, and that doesn't appear to be anything different from that.
Okay. All right, well, let me ask you a few other questions just to make sure that I know what we need to be checking for. So, some personal questions here. When is the last time you had any kind of sexual contact?
Well, I told you I met this new guy. We've
yeah.
been going together for a while.
Right.
So we had sex, started having sex. It's been pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
About a month ago, yeah.
Okay,
pretty
all
good.
Right. All right, and when you have sex, is it vaginal sex?
Yeah.
Like penis in the vagina kind
oh,
of sex?
Oh, yeah.
All right, are you going down on him?
A couple of times.
Okay. And what about if he's putting his penis in your bottom or your rectum?
I don't like that.
Okay.
No, we're not doing that.
Now, are you guys using condoms at all when you have sex?
I'm on the pill. I don't need to use condoms. You know, we're,
okay.
you know, he's a nice guy. He really is a nice guy, and that's not something I need to worry about.
Okay,
I'm
well,
not going to get pregnant.
Well, we'll talk about that a little
I
bit more later.
I'm not going to get pregnant.
Excuse me. Okay. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But you know, do you know if he's been checked for STDs, or has that come up at all in the conversation? You know what I'm talking about, sexually transmitted infections?
We've never talked about that. I mean, this is a nice guy, Dr. B. I don't think he...
Well, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. But, you know, these infections are quite common, and a lot of times they don't have symptoms with them. So, you know, it's possible for people to have an infection going on and just not know it. It doesn't mean they're not nice.
But it's, you know, it's important, you know, that you get checked out before you stop using condoms. Remember, pregnancy is not the only issue here.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll get checked. I know it's a urinary tract infection. So
that's okay. Well, that's good. We'll check your urine and check you all out. So let's go and do an exam and see what's going on, okay?
Okay. All right.
So then we're going to go do our exam, and now we're back a couple days later and have our test results. And so,
hey, Dr. B, how you doing?
I'm fine. All right, Terry, so, you know, as you know, when we did your exam, we didn't find anything specific that we needed to treat, but it looks like your chlamydia test is positive. Okay, your gonorrhea test was negative, your HIV test was negative, but the chlamydia came back positive. Do you know what chlamydia is?
Isn't it like gonorrhea?
It's a bacteria. It's like gonorrhea in the way that it is sexually transmitted. And it is curable, okay? So there's something we can do about that today. And it is, and unfortunately, it's pretty common in the population. And as we talked about earlier, a lot of people have no symptoms with this, and they can't carry it for a while. So, you know, it's always hard to know exactly when people got things.
How long do you think could I have had this for a long time?
It's really hard to know. Remember back when you had your divorce, you were a little worried about your husband?
Yeah, he was a son of a...
Okay. So, you know, I did test you for that, you know, when you guys broke up, and you were negative at that time. Now, tests are not 100%, but, you know, that test was negative at the time. So, I can't say for sure, but, you know, as I mentioned, it is possible, you know, this gentleman that you've met, he needs to be checked out. It's going to be important for him, and even if he's not having symptoms, because, as I mentioned, a lot of times people don't know that they have something like this going on.
Well, I'm only having sex with him. He's the only person I've had sex with.
Okay, so in the last 2 months, he's the only partner.
In the last year.
Okay. All right. Well, let me just, a couple of things. As I mentioned, it's curable, and I'm glad we found out about it. I know you're distressed right now, but, you know, by getting this treated, we can prevent you from having complications like pelvic inflammatory disease and chronic pelvic pain that sometimes happens if these infections go on and they're untreated. So that's the positive that we know about it. We can do something about it. The treatment is pretty easy. It's just going to be a one-time dose of medicine, but it's going to be important not to have sex for at least a week after. After he's been treated too, okay, not just you.
I don't think you need to worry about that.
Okay, all right. And then I want you to come back in and see me for sure within the next 3 months, and I'm just going to check you again and make sure that nothing, you haven't gotten the infection back. So we've taken care of issues about your health. We need to now talk about his health and what we can do. Well, I know you're upset right now, and that's understandable. But it is going to be important for your health and his health that he comes in and gets evaluated for other STDs, but treated specifically for this one. No matter what his findings are on exam, he needs to just go ahead and be treated. So there's a couple ways that we can do this, and it depends on what works best for you and him.
So I have to say something to him. I have to talk to him again?
Well, it depends on what you want to do. So let's go through some options. I mean, either I can do it, you can do it, we can do it together, okay? So specifically, if you're not comfortable talking with him again, I mean, we can have, you know, either I or another health department staff can take information from you and contact him in a confidential manner. They wouldn't tell him that it was you that had the infection, okay? But tell him he's been in contact with an infection and he needs to come in for evaluation and treatment. So that's one option. The other option is if you're comfortable with it and if you feel safe doing it, it's for you to contact him. And we can talk about ways to talk with him about this. And you can do it through letter, telephone, face-to-face, whatever works best. we can do kind of a combination where if you want to do it and then you change your mind, then I have your back and I'll do it for you. There you can bring them in and we can do this together. And then there are also some resources in the community, some people that are really good at doing this, very professional, outside of the health department that could help. So I know that this is all a lot of information at once, but do you have a sense about what direction you'd want to go with this?
Right now I'm so angry, I don't know if I ever want to talk to him again. I guess I do have to get in touch with him. I just don't know if I want to talk to him by myself.
Okay. Well, and if you're uncomfortable with that, bring him in here, and you know, we can talk to him together. You know, if you are going to contact him, do you know when you'd want to do that? What kind of time frame you're? And it's okay to take a little time to cool off. You know, kind of get adjusted to this and all this information. But we do want to, you know, also try to get him in pretty soon. To get this taken care of.
I've never thought about this. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Maybe I could suggest, you know, if you contact him, just tell him that you have some important information and that you've just found out you've had an STD and that you have chlamydia and that it's important that, you know, for your health and his health that he come in and get evaluated and treated, and that you know, you can bring him in and I'll talk with him about it as well.
Yeah, find out what Celeste's been hanging out with.
Well, I don't know that we know that for sure. I mean, that is the common reaction when we find out about STDs, and it's not uncommon to be angry. But, you know, it is a common infection, and as I mentioned, we don't know that he knew this was going on. And it doesn't mean he's sleeping around just because, you know, even if he's infected, that's not what it means, okay? You know, when you talk to him, some points to bring up are, you know, the complications that can happen from untreated infection, but that it, in the asymptomatic, the fact that a lot of people don't have symptoms, because a lot of people don't realize that. And I have seen sometimes, you know, partners will give some kickback on not wanting to come in because they're not having symptoms. So it's important to kind of address that on the front end, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have an infection going on. You know, these infections can increase your risk of getting HIV if you get exposed. So another reason we need to treat them. And they're very curable. Chlamydia is very curable. So those are some points in terms of, you know, and he could transmit to other people if he doesn't get treated. If you decide, you know, that this relationship's not going to go on,
well,
and that's for you to decide.
To be continued. I thought he was really a nice guy.
Well,
I really was excited. I thought this was somebody I could really like, and I'm not happy.
Don't throw the towel in yet, okay? But, you know, it is important because we don't want this to keep, and we don't want you to get reinfected either, okay?
Yeah, right now, I don't think you've got to worry about me getting reinfected from him.
Yeah. So, you know, those are some points to think about. And remember, these are just treatable. There's something we can do about it. So where do you want to take it from here? How do you want to, how can I support you to get this done?
Well, I don't want anything bad to happen to him. Oh, let me take that back. I don't think I'd mind if anything bad happened to him, but I'm certainly not a virgin, and he wasn't either, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't guess. I know. So I guess maybe I'll call him when I come in. Can I bring him in to see you?
Sure. And if you want to give me a call and let me know that you've talked to him and we can, you know, set up a time and you guys coming in here together and we can go from there.
Okay.
Does that sound like a plan?
It sounds like a plan, but I don't feel as good as I did when I came in.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll call him tonight and I'll call you and let you know what he said and when I can get him to come in, if he comes in.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll take it from there. And if he doesn't come in, there are other methods we could maybe use to encourage him.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's just an example of some interaction. Thank you. in the types of training we do, you guys would get to role play and practice some responses and maybe some patients that are maybe even a little more challenging, just to go through it and try to simulate real life as much as possible. Do y'all have any questions about any of this so far? I mean, that was really the point, was to show the experiential part of what we do.
And the other thing that we always like to point out, I mean, we just spent 15 minutes doing an interaction with a patient. Sometimes if you're in practice, you don't have time for 15 minutes. However, when you come to the trainings and you have the luxury of practicing this a little bit, then you'll find out that you incorporate some of the other, aspects of it when you're interacting with your patient. And I think that's one of the most important things. I know our faculty, when they're doing interactions, will tell me, but they'll come to a training like this and say, it's all really nice, but we don't have time to do that. And then when we do a training and they're precepting, and the clinicians who come in are being part of the preceptive experience, they'll say, it's really great to see how your clinicians incorporate all of those techniques you're showing us, so that what happens is after a while they start to become second nature. And just like you do when you interact with your patients, you get that second, sort of that innate sense that you know what's going on with somebody, or when somebody's not telling you everything, and that you can interact with them, and that that becomes part of how you interact with folks. So it's a good experience. Not everybody can have Dr. Bachman.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it, unless y'all have questions. And hopefully you'll come and take some of our courses. We'd love to see you.